new podcast out with Luiz da Costa. It's a phenomenal story. He grew up in Brazil, cut his teeth in a number of businesses, which he shares on the podcast, and then migrated to the U.S. and started his own business here, a business he runs through relationships with no contracts. Talk about putting your work on the line every day. And you can really resonate with the conversation. Has built a phenomenal culture in his company, but also a phenomenal business. And we also toy with the idea of like challenges and overcoming some of those obstacles, which he gets into. And he's got a saying that he really got me into, which was in spite of, not because of. So check out the podcast. It was excellent. And I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
Luiz, first off, thanks for coming on Beers and Careers.
My pleasure.
Much appreciated. Beer of choice, Stella.
Stella Artois.
Not a bad Monday after the Super Bowl beer.
I know, yeah.
Not a bad one. Luiz, you own Modular Concepts.
I do.
Right down the road from us here. But you've got a really interesting journey that I'm excited to share with the audience here. But before I dive in, I've got to ask you a couple boilerplate questions to let the audience know. Yeah, what is, since we're on Beers and Careers here, what is your favorite beer or cocktail or go-to drink if you have one?
I'm a beer guy, so
okay.
I like Stella, I like Sam Adams, and some others. But I'm not a drinker per se.
Yeah.
I drink very moderately.
Yes.
And very...
Is that me? Sorry.
No worries.
Good way to get it going. Hit the wrong one. I'm with you. I'm not a big drinker.
Yeah.
But like normal Sam Adams?
Yeah, normal Sam. Or like on the winter, they have the lager or something.
Oh, yeah, the winter.
It's a little heavier.
Yeah,
So I like, I never like get drunk or anything on anything, let alone beer.
Mm.
But I do like, to share a beer, like on a conversation like that, nothing better than,
A good social lubricant.
Yeah, of course. And then I have, caipirinha, which is a authentic Brazilian drink, which is very good, very deceiving.
Okay.
Because it's good, tastes good, but it's super strong. So it's very easy to go beyond the limit.
Right, okay. And how would you make that?
That takes cachaça, which is, a Brazilian super alcoholic drink. So it's like a rum or a gin, and it's made from sugar cane.
Mm.
Right?
Okay.
So or a tequila. It's close to a tequila, but it's made from sugar cane. So it's super, like you can set it on fire,
Wow.
And it takes cachaça, ice, sugar, and limes. And there is a certain proportion.
Yeah.
And it's very good.
And refreshing, I bet. It sounds very refreshing.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, a hot day.
I never saw someone say, I don't like it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Sugarcane. I got the chance to live in Australia for a little while, and that was a huge export out there.
Yeah,
so driving around, just be smelling burning sugar for long. Do you curse?
Not really. I'm from a... From a Christian background, right?
Okay,
so my father is a pastor, so I grew up in church and all that stuff. Not to say that should, determine that, but I'm just saying, like, it was never part of my growing up.
Yeah.
Now, I once did, I remember as if it was yesterday, I was about maybe 6 years old, and I just heard something on the street, and I went home and just let it go. And my father was like, you know what that means? I said, I don't. So he very wisely took me to a room and explained it to me and very kindly told me that if he heard that again from my mouth, next time there will be no conversation.
I love that.
And that was the last time I spoke that word.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
No, I really don't curse. I don't mind. Like I had friends that they curse so much, and for them it seems so natural that it's not even offensive. So it's just, I don't.
I've struggled with it. I definitely, same kind of thing with the Catholic Christian background.
Right.
It was frowned upon, but I don't know whether it was because I grew up in an Italian family or my dad worked in construction.
Of course, it
let it rip. And now with little boys at home, it's like, okay, got to get back in that normal mindset for them. But no worries. Are you, do you have a favorite quote by any chance?
Oh, I have several. We have several in Brazil. So I like the ones that refer to, you know, to achieving things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't even know if, like, who said that or if I invented some of them. Probably not. Probably I heard it before. But I like, in spite of, not because of. I always use that. And it's not even a quote. It's more like, it's, for instance, like, we are in America, right?
Yes.
I'm from Brazil. So we got here, everything happened very differently than what we had planned. And yet, we were able to succeed.
Mm.
Not because of this or that, but in spite of this or that. You know what I mean? So I always...
Mindset change.
It's a mindset. And that goes like based on the... you can have an excuse, right?
Mm-hmm.
For anything. So if you want to do something, you do it. And if you don't want, you find an excuse. It's... I mean, of course, there are things that are literally impossible. But for most things that, you know, we can achieve, we can do it. And if we don't try or if we are afraid to fail, then we just make an excuse.
Mm.
So that's why I say, I always tell my son, like, look, I know it's hard, this and that. But when you get it, you're going to be able to say, I got it in spite of the difficulties.
Yes.
And not, I didn't get it because it was difficult.
Right, right. Right. Yeah. Changes from an empowering mindset to like a victim mindset. Yeah.
And then we have like Andrea, Meredith, they always laugh at my quotes because they are Brazilian and they are translated and sometimes it makes not as much sense. So one of those days we're at a meeting, I said, we say in Brazil, like that a dog that was beaten by a snake is now afraid of sausage links, right?
Because it looks like it.
Because it looks like it. So it's a good thing, of course, you know, but because, so, and that applies to like you had a bad experience before and now you have an opportunity that kind of resembles that and you don't take it because you are afraid of,
right.
of what happens to you.
Because it looks like what's,
And there are many others.
Oh, I like that. I like that one a lot. I mean, that might get a little lost in translation, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Or like a dog with two owners will die of hunger. You know what I mean? Like, because
you abdicate responsibility.
I think you took, you know, you fed him.
Yeah.
And so that's why he's... You know, got to be very specific in management and assign tasks and all that stuff.
Yeah. Who's
large,
accountable?
Large or small. Yeah. Yeah. No task should have two owners because it won't be done.
And how often do they? They really, you know, it's an easy mistake to make, too.
Yeah.
It's such an easy mistake. I love that. Do you have a favorite book?
Yeah. Well, I'm an avid reader.
Okay.
I read a lot. Which actually helped me a lot with my English, too. Although it's still not very good, but it's much better than when I first started. And so I like, I love the Start With The Why.
Yeah,
Simon Sinek. Yeah. I love, like, it's interesting because I saw one of your guests praising and applying the... Poor Dad, Rich Dad.
Yes, right? Yes.
And it's a great book. I read it. I didn't like the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's not like nothing wrong with the principles or anything, but I think it's more like a cultural thing.
Yes.
That we have in Brazil, different from what you guys have here, even in terms of making your future and everything. The economy here is based on credit.
Right? Yes.
While in Brazil, it's based on what you have. There's no, like, if you have it, you buy it. If you don't have it, then you can't buy it. You know?
Right.
So so those principles don't translate as much.
Mm.
Now much more because, you know, with the internet and all this stuff. But when I read it, like, probably 20 years ago.
Yes, you're like
25 years ago.
Didn't resonate.
It didn't. Yet, I you know, you always learn. I read... you know, the I don't know how it's named here, but I think it's Man's Worldly Goods, the history of the riches of the nations. And that comes from the feudalism until capitalism, socialism, and explains, it's an old book, probably 50 or 60 or more years old that was written, but it's a very good book.
Okay, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. And that those are like in terms of business and professional development. But
yes.
I read everything John Grisham ever wrote.
I love that's your reading John for Grisham. Pleasure.
Yeah.
Go to.
Yeah, yeah. Vince Flynn.
Okay.
Yeah. And then many others I'm always reading. Yeah.
Yes. It's a, it's got to be one of the most rewarding habits.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be one, you know, just dreaming in a book is phenomenal.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, it doesn't occupy any space in your brain or anything.
No.
Brings more culture. I always tell my kids, and they read a lot too. Like, the more you read, the better you can write.
Mm-hmm.
The better you can speak. The more words you have in your vocabulary.
Yes.
So that's.
And I think it helps you see the world through other people's eyes.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a phenomenal way. Oh, those are good ones. I'm gonna check out that.
And of course, again, with my background, and I am a Christian, so I read the Bible many times.
Right.
I still read, you know, like every time I see something new, it's just a different approach that I have, which is not a religious approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's more like a relationship approach.
Yes.
And I didn't create that either. It's just like something that I identify with. Because religion is more like check marks, right? Do this, do that. Don't do this, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Check. Oh, I'm good with God. While a relationship is really having God as a part of my life as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter what I'm doing.
The ebbs and flows, yes.
Yeah, it's not like now I'm church, I'm Christian, now I'm working.
Right.
You know, like...
It's woven into everyday life.
Yeah, it is. And doesn't make me a saint or I'm not levitating. No, I'm just a regular guy. Probably worse than most because I really need that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would be lost without it. So
that's funny to hear you say that because I got into or I got more into or say over the last 4 years now Stoic philosophy like Marcus Aurelius and doing some of that.
Yeah.
And at one point I was reading a passage every day from the Daily Stoic.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
And then like 6 months in, I was like, this is basically very similar if I just read a similar verse from the Bible.
Right.
It was like it really brought me back to be like, okay, this is going to change. Yeah. It changed the way I looked at it.
Yeah.
From your point to transactional checking the box to like this is more of a relationship.
Yeah.
There was a I love your take on that.
And for me, Mark, it's also the things I like that relationship. It's that one is in spite of me, certainly not because of me.
Mm.
I know myself, but also it's not that you told me or that my parents told me. Those are my own experiences.
Yes.
So, I mean, I hope it help and affect others, but in the end, it doesn't matter. It's what was changed in my life.
Mm.
You know, it was done for me.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It was what God has done for me that I know.
Right.
And the transformation,
and
the mindset, and so it's undeniable. It would be a sin to hide that or to not recognize that. So again, all I can do is, you know, if someone asks me, I say, well, that's my experience. That's who I am.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to apologize.
It's ingrained.
Right. Exactly.
Absolutely not.
Exactly.
Nor I will not impose it to you too.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right. Because people have to find their own way.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
I love that. What was, I got to ask you one last one. What was your first job?
Oh, boy. First?
Yeah.
So I was 12 years old. And in Brazil, you go to school like from 7 to noon.
Okay.
And then there is a second turn from 1 to 5 or so.
Okay.
Right? So when I was studying in the morning, I would come home with my bike and grab lunch, and then I went to a pharmacy, and I would work there trying to collect small debts that, you know, the it was a small city, so I would with my bike would go to, you know, Mrs. Joanna's house and say, hey, do you mind paying for the Voltaren that you took last week?
Mm-hmm.
So I would just collect those, and that was my first job, and I was so glad to have that job. And I got that because I always heard my father talking about he was working since he was nine. Mm. He came from like a super, super poor family, like poor like Americans don't know.
Okay.
Super poor. And so he always told me those stories. And then at 11, I was like, I'm behind.
Yes.
So he didn't ask me to do that. And we were poor too, but not to the level that he was. And so we would get like, it's not even a dollar, but let's say it was a dollar a month as an allowance.
Right.
And we're like,
yeah.
And it was nothing, like maybe a chocolate bar or something. And then for like 1 month, I didn't get it. 2 months, I didn't get it. Then I realized, man, you know, things are. So I decided to do that. So I would bring some money home and would do like the same as my dad did, like help, you know, help at home. So I worked hard and I got my first payment. It was like 3 bills and some coins. And I was super happy. And when I got home, I realized that I had lost the bills.
No way.
Because I guess fell from my pocket. So I just had the coins. But that was my first job and it was good. You know, never stopped since then. So
yeah. I mean, hey, 12 years old.
Yeah.
Stuff falls out of your pocket.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, I can tell it's burned in your brain.
Oh, yeah.
You'll never forget that. That is awesome. So you, like, I'd love to hear, like, how old were you when you came to the States? And then, like, maybe you can give me a brief synopsis of then from when you came here to why you started a business.
Of course. So just so you know, like in Brazil at that point, right? So from there, I was living, like, in the county, like, in the interior of of my state. And then we moved to the capital of that state, is the south of Brazil. Over there, I started working at an accountant office. Okay. So I would go to the accounting office in the morning from 8 to noon. Then I was at a bank doing just processing checks from 1 to 7. And then I would run to school, to night school, high school, not college or anything. That started at 7 and it would go up to 10:30 or so, but I was always late. But that was like my life for a good time.
Wow.
After that, and I was happy. I mean, I'm not complaining. I'm glad I had that. And it was like buses, you know what I mean? Like I would take like 5-6 buses a day to do all that stuff. But then, you know, you get some knowledge so I started working at a hospital. Then because a company saw how I did my work at the hospital, I was like in the acquisitions department.
Mm-hmm.
Then they hired me, and that was B. Brown, which is a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
And that was great, but I had no idea what to do there. I didn't get any training. So my tenure at B. Brown was short, maybe a year, year and a half.
Okay.
And then from there, I went to... I started dating my wife, and her father had a Blockbuster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it wasn't a Blockbuster, but it was like a small...
video rental.
A video, yeah. And working there, taking care of customers, just at night after, you know, working during the day, I would just go to date my wife, but then it was still open, so I would work, right? So I joked that I acquired her with my work. Of course not. I there is no work that I could do that would be, you know, enough to pay for her.
Mm.
She's fantastic. But anyhow, a customer from that business saw my customer service and then offered me a job at distributor of SC Johnson.
Okay.
So I started at that distributor. From there, I was hired by SC Johnson directly as a junior supervisor or something. Made my career there. Was promoted several times. Then I was promoted to a position in São Paulo, which is not the capital of Brazil, but it's the financial capital of Brazil, like New York, for America. So so there I made my career. There was a merger. I went to work for Ecolab, which is another American giant. I worked at Ecolab for probably 6 or 7 years.
Okay.
But Brazil was very corrupt and violent. And at this point, I had... an 8 and 4.5 years old, right? So you're very familiar with that.
Yeah.
So, and I was seeing that environment where they were, you know, like being raised and although we had like values and everything, but everything surrounding them was like violence and corruption and being protective. So so one day there was a minivan, like a Chrysler minivan,
yeah,
which here is like a loser cruiser, right? they call, no offense to whoever has it.
Yeah, right, exactly. I have a buddy with one. This is perfect.
Right, yeah. But there was like the car. Like, wow, my goodness, like, right. Look at this car. So I told Gabby, Gabby, I think that, you know, if we live at the, you know, if we were at the United States, you know, we could have that car. And she said, and she was not even nine. She said, no, daddy, they will kill you for the car.
Mm.
So, you know what I mean? Like, that's just like the thought like, process. And, man, I can't raise my kids with that. So I start making efforts to come here. And that worked through a company in Manaus, which is north of Brazil. It's the jungle. It's the capital of the Amazon.
Okay.
the jungle. So to get to Manaus, you go by plane or by boat. You can.
Wow.
Yeah. So, well, now probably we can, but not at that time. And so there was this business there that they had the rights to negotiate a line of institutional paper in America from Brazil. So toilet paper, paper towel for industries, for restaurants, for all that stuff. So I thought that's great. So I came, did the market prospection. I worked with distribution in Brazil, so I knew everything from like establishing, starting, training, everything, you know, to get a business working without any of my money, because it was like backed up by Ecolab or SC Johnson. So it was a great learning for me. So I did and came here to do that with everything planned. And that was 2007, 2008.
Oh, okay.
And the economy collapsed.
Yes.
And that didn't work, of course, because now the dollar lost a lot of value.
Mm-hmm.
So the currency difference was prohibitive.
Yeah.
So, but now I'm here with my family. Wow. What do I do?
So that's what you were alluding to when you said things didn't go as well as planned when you got here?
That's an understatement.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, so I didn't have much English at all. Although I worked for American companies, my English was very limited, like very limited.
Okay.
And so now, you know, you can go back because I don't
what
have
year
nothing
is this?
Else. That was 2007. August 2007.
Okay.
August 15, 2007, we arrived here. So so I say we need to do something, but at that point I couldn't work because all my paperwork was being backed up by that company.
Right.
And now we don't know where we are, so I can't work for anyone. And then I read something like be your own boss.
Mm.
So that's interesting. But I misunderstood the principle, and it was a commercial cleaning franchise.
Okay.
And I thought like that I would invest like $1,500 and then have the opportunity to make $3,000 a month or something like that. And it was like quite the opposite. It was like invest $15,000 and you're going to make $1,500 a month.
Right.
But I didn't know that. And when the guy was very, very nice to me, actually. But the principle of the business is so so wrong, I would say, that later in life I came to find out that 98% of the franchisees were not Americans.
Oh.
So that kind of shows that if you understand the market and the business, you would never buy a business like that.
Right.
But anyhow, I did. And then when I realized that it was, I told my wife, look, the only way we can make it happen, it's volume.
Yes.
Because, you know, there are several deductions. So the 1500 end up being like 600.
Right, right.
And, like, so, and then I was very successful in Brazil. I like to joke that I was the guy in the corner office with a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm start cleaning that very bathroom.
Right.
Right. And it was good because I was in this industry, I had all the theory, right?
Right.
How to clean, the chemicals, but I didn't have the action, right?
Yes.
The hands-on approach. But now I have nothing else to do than do cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
So I started cleaning myself and doing a lot, working a lot with cleaning and trying to get more volume and everything. Long story short, we did get a lot more volume. My wife started doing it with me. We would go like to some places with our hearts on our, you know, like because the kids were home alone, right?
Yeah.
In an apartment, and we knew like DCF, you know, and all that stuff.
Yes.
They knock, or if there is a fire, and they were 9 and 6.
Yes.
So, oh, let's go. And so it was a very interesting period. But we did it. My wife is fantastic. So we worked together, and we started getting more customers, and then I brought a nephew and doing more customers. And long story short, at some point, the thing with the franchise stopped. We legally separated.
Mm-hmm.
And after a certain dispute, I would say, to which now that I have my own business, I do clearly see the other guy's point.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, no question. But at some point, I was actually, I read a quote that says, like, behind every success story, there is a point of no choice.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, you gotta do, there's mm-hmm. no choice.
Right.
So I was at that very point. There's all my income was with that guy coming through, you know,
yeah.
through that company. And he said he wouldn't pay me a penny anymore. Now what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we try to find the legal solution, which we did accomplish. And then we started modular with maybe less than a dozen customers.
Okay. What year is this?
That was 2015.
Okay.
Yeah. The end of 14, mm-hmm. beginning of 15. Including this one. Up here was Cat Edge.
Yes.
Yeah. And then down here was Marlboro Office Center. Mm-hmm. And so they were part of that list of customers. And now, again, because I had all that background in terms of establishing businesses and everything, and my education, too, which I concluded my college as an adult. I already had the two kids, so I would go at night. And then I did a specialization here at Notre Dame for strategic leadership. So I got the education, you know, the learning.
Yeah.
And then I had the experience, and now I have the opportunity.
Mm.
I have no choice, so might as well use everything. And that's what we did. So we started modular in 2014, 15, with the customers that we inherited, quote unquote, from the franchise, because
okay.
we bought those customers,
yes.
like literally, I paid for those customers, yet they were not ours. Like, so it was kind of, but then through that resolution, they became, in fact, ours. And so it just started with that.
Wow.
And I believe we had something like maybe $150,000 yearly revenue.
Mm.
And like each customer was super important and still is. But like when you have six or seven, you know what I mean? Like you're
white knuckling.
Oh, yeah. You're every day. You're like, some of them say, hey, you don't need to come every day.
Yeah.
We're good. If we need something, we're going to call it. But and that's what created actually the not just the name, but the way we do business. So the name is modular, right?
Yes.
Why modular? Because we are based in three basic modules, which are areas, frequency, and tasks. So those are the three modules. So when you combine those three, we can customize services for any kind of customers. So just for you to have a better idea. So the areas, let's say this very office here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is an office. This is an area. The frequency for this office here will be different than the frequency for the restroom.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because there I need 5 times a week service. Here I probably need maybe once, maybe twice a week.
Right.
And then the tasks in the restroom, I need to do everything every day. Here, even if I come here every day, I don't need to dust every day. I don't
right.
need to vacuum every day. I probably need to take the trash every day.
Mm-hmm.
So by combining the areas, the frequency, and the tasks for each environment, for each room, or for each sector of a company, of an office, or an industry, then we can precisely charge you for that.
Wow.
So you don't need to pay for 5 times dusting or vacuum when you're not getting times dusting
and
or
using
vacuum.
It.
Right? So that's what we did. And the second thing is, because I had that attention to and relationships, my business is completely relational, not transactional, completely.
Mm.
And the main proof of that is that we work without a contract. So we are as good as the service we provide. So I believe that if we are doing good, you have no reason to get rid of us. And if we're not, then you should. You should not keep a service that's not you know, delivering what was expected or agreed upon.
Mm.
Or maybe we are doing good, you are happy, but life happens and now you need to save money or something. So put us on pause, let us be part of your solution. Mm-hmm. And when you are healthy again, bring us back if you want, and we resume there. So
probably both of those are the opposite of how it worked at the franchise.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Oh, no, not just the franchise, the entire industry.
Yeah, I was going to say, your modular concept of like the task, the frequency, and the area, you're innovating that, right? Is that how that world works? I don't know.
No, it's not. I can't say that I created that,
right,
but I certainly put that together.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, I put that together in a system.
Yes.
And if I'm being honest, all companies do that.
Mm.
All of them
will
deal with areas, will deal with frequency, and will deal with tasks.
Right.
There is no escaping that. Now, putting the way I put inside a system and communicating that to the customer in a way that that brings value, right? That I did. So it's not that I created the system or the elements. I just put them together, working in a way that will benefit the customer. And I do think it benefits us too, because as human beings, we have the tendency to accommodate, right?
Yes.
You do something for a while,
yes,
you accommodate. You know, things are good. Mm-hmm. And usually you accommodate every time you have a safety net, right? Oh, I'll have my I don't know, like evaluation. So, oh man, God, I got an 8 rather than a 10. So now the next 6 months, you're right?
Yes.
Because now you're kind of using your safety net and now you can bounce back. And if you have no safety net, there is no accommodation. You
know,
you gotta be
top
all the time. And it's not that we're perfect or anything, but that's when the relationships come in place, because I'm not. The company is not transactional, but relational. And because we are humans, we still might accommodate.
Mm-hmm.
But then rather than kicking me out, which you could do, because we have a relationship, because I understood your business, because I brought benefits and you know, like we work together, chances are you're going to say, hey, Louis, can you please just ask the cleaners to, you know, and then we can fix that and can. And also because we're relational, we are constantly visiting and constantly fixing things before you see that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are no getting complaints. Yeah. So it's a lot of work.
Yes.
I don't think it's more work than other companies. It's just like focused on a different area. You know, like most of them are focused in enforcing the contract or in putting as many hurdles as they can so the customer will not cancel.
Mm.
I'm directing my works to the same, finality that the customer doesn't cancel, but because he's happy, not because it's too hard to cancel.
Because they have to.
Right.
So, how did the no contracts thing evolve?
We started this way. And again, it's easier when you have a dozen customers or 20 customers.
And they know
Now we have hundreds of customers. And so, of course, it's harder. And also, to the point of that interview that on my website, we never lost a customer, right?
Mm.
Or I think we had lost one customer that something like that. But it was like phenomenal. But again, you have 20, you know. When we have hundreds, you're gonna lose customers. There's no question about that.
Right.
They die, they close, they are unhappy. Some people it's very hard to please.
Mm-hmm.
Some are it's just not a good fit. So now I understand that, you know, it still hurts, but I understand that. So the main strategy is not just like getting customers, but it's also protecting the back door, right? So, you try to avoid losing customers, again, not by tying them to a contract, but just to being present, present, understanding and everything. And last year we lost more customers than ever. Probably 4 or 5,
yeah,
which is nothing really. But we brought in like 25 or so.
Okay.
Now, in terms of general numbers, attrition rate, our industry goes 20-25% yearly.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, which was our largest one, we got to maybe 3.5%.
Wow.
And there were some years that we had zero. Most so lifetime we had below 2% without a contract. That 20% is with a contract.
Yeah, mate.
The average lifetime is 13 months. It's because the basic contract is for 12.
Right.
So it's the time, the switch, and that's it. We have got, like the Davis companies. We service this place here since you guys are here.
Yeah.
But upstairs and the building itself, because it belonged to someone else, was since 2012.
Wow.
Or so.
Wow.
So with the franchise,
yeah,
and then the transition, and we still have. Our first customer that we got through the franchise is right here on Cedar Hill.
Yeah.
I did that customer myself, then with my wife, then with my nephew, then my wife made friends there. She's fantastic. So, like, people love her. Not just we still have that customer, but my wife still does.
No way.
She does the cleaning
there.
No
way.
Yeah. She loves them, and they love her, too. So I joke that if we have an argument or something and I want to win, and I say, look, if you keep that, I'll take that customer from you. I say, oh, no.
it's a good bargain.
Right,
and how
right.
many employees total now?
So between employees and subcontractors, we have about 52 to 55 people working with us.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good group.
Yeah.
Fantastic people. I'll tell you, man, I could have all the systems and wells, you know, bells and whistles. If I didn't have the people that we have doing the service, delivering our promises, there would be no way for us to have the success we have. Mm. So God has blessed us with excellent people, like responsible and committed.
Mm.
And the people that understand what we do, why we do. So we are very, very glad, you know, to have the people we have, to have the customers we have. And we found out, I found out recently that, and actually I put that on my website, that we really don't do cleaning, right? Our business is helping people.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's sincere. It's not marketing or anything.
Yes.
It's helping the customers, you know, like nothing better for whoever is the manager here or in any other place to forget about cleaning.
Yes.
You know, concentrate on your core business. And the reason you're going to forget about that is because I'm committed to you.
I'll take care
of that.
Yeah.
Right? And on the other hand, people that, you know, want to work and want to be recognized, just want to have some dignity, no matter what kind of work they do, they find it with us.
Mm. I was going to say, I feel like, so in the staffing business, we're in the service
business, too.
And, and I've always, you know, joked people helping people since 1985. Like, that's kind of what we do. But I am sitting here thinking to myself, no contracts, your length of customer, and then the modular concept. I'm just thinking to myself, like, that is a really awesome way to message your culture day one to a new employee or continuous. It's like, guys, it doesn't, you know, we're not hiding behind legalese.
But mind you, it's not rocket science. It's cleaning. So it's the very entry level, right?
Yes.
Of the working force or anything like that. And although it's very simple, it still can be messed up, right?
Oh, my gosh.
That's why people change and everything. But the point is, I lost count of how many times, for instance, anyone that starts working with us, being a subcontractor or an employee, excuse me, they will come in, you know, with the basis that in terms of payments and everything. And then the first time they get I think now it's $100 welcome bonus.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing. I mean, it's $100. I mean,
yeah, it's not. Yeah,
it's nothing that is going to make me, you know, it's not going to change any of our lives.
Right.
But it's a token of appreciation and upfront trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Gratitude.
So prove me wrong. I trust you. You know, I trust you're going to do it. Prove me wrong. Hopefully not.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, you know, you're going to prove yourself. And then
we'll pay you.
No, So, and then from time to time, we also do that. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it's Thanksgiving. Maybe it's Christmas. For Christmas, we get the names of their kids under 15, and we give gifts to all of them.
Oh, wow.
And so, as I said, I lost count of how many times people say, look, I'm in America. Most of my people are Brazilians. I'm in America for 25 years. I never got like a thank you, let alone a bonus. And it's not about Americans or anything. But again, it's because it's the entry level. And many people wrongly, they don't give value to that work or to that worker without knowing that this is essential for anything you do.
The world would stop.
Absolutely. Like you really. So, and we do. You know what I mean? Like we recognize them. We say thank you. We pay them. Of course, that's our obligation to pay them actually ahead of time. And then so they feel valued. They feel part of that. And also we make them aware of, for instance, we clean the Crossroads School. It's a school for autistic kids.
Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Right where you used to be.
I know. Yeah, where you used to be. Yeah. Correct. Fantastic people there. So we do the cleaning there. And every time I have someone new, although it's very rare that we have someone new, I tell them, look, our mission here is to give those kids that at no fault of their own, you know, have autism at this level or, you know, they are in the spectrum. We're going to give them a safer environment, a better life, a chance of not getting sick because they are here or because the other student, you know, I don't know, left something that would, that's our, so we are here. It's not like to make money or anything like that. Everything else is going to be a consequence. Our mission here is to help those kids. It's to work for them, right? And then for the staff. And then all the rest is going to be a consequence. So having that that orientation, that mission clear for them, it helps a lot.
You know, it sets the table.
Of course. Yeah. And again, and the customer sees that. So it's, again, I'm not working for them. We are working with them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
to a similar mission.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course.
How? Because I feel like from when you started the company to today, you've kept many things. There's some things that are the same, like how you treat people and that, right? Like, in what ways, like, what are your challenges today running a company with, 20x the customer base that you had previously? Like, how has it evolved? How have you had to evolve as a leader of the organization? And then also, what's stayed the same kind of through that?
Well, the challenges that they come with size, right? So you need more bodies, you need more minds to run things, to supervise, to manage, and everything. And on that regard, I'm also blessed that I have a 22-year-old son, Daniel, that works with us, and so he's our operations manager. So a lot of those visits and that interaction between customers and the subcontractors or the employees, Daniel is starting to take over and he's doing it. He's doing his master's now, so he's not like 100% with us. But and he must prioritize that. That's what I tell him. Like, but then any other time that he has or if he's on vacation, then he really helps us. So this is one challenge and one kind of solution that we have. Besides, of course, it's the business is his, right?
Yes.
So the more he knows and everything, the better. If he wants, if he's doing his master in analytics.
Oh, wow.
So he might get a much better job.
Yeah.
And then he should go, of course. But but that's one of the challenges. The other one is what I just mentioned, like, the more customers you have, right?
Yeah.
The more chance you have to lose some customers and
keep
and
your challenge. Product quality.
Yeah. And then of course you know that as well because that's your market qualified labor, right? Available labor, and that's a challenge.
Yes.
We are very fortunate on that regard in terms of having people actually literally waiting to be called to do, because we do a lot of part-times.
Yeah.
So it's not like you need to leave your job to come work with us. It's just like you need to pay
for
the car so
you
can come
and
do 4 hours and things like that. So we have plenty of people, but sometimes we have jobs that need like 3 people for 8 hours with background checks and queries and all. And then there is a difference between what is needed, what the market pays, and what's attractive.
What's available,
so it's very hard to you know, to yes. get labor.
Feels like the pressure only is getting harder too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a, and to your point, in this country, we don't put a tremendous amount of value. We should put more value on that level of work, and people don't. I feel like there's also people who don't pick it up because of that.
It could be. I wouldn't say it's just here. Like that's Brazil everywhere. Is even yeah. worse.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Americans are very polite, very nice people. So you know they will. Some literally mistreat my people. Mostly not. They oh, either treat them well or tolerate them. I don't know. But my point is that, like, it's very rare that someone would really, like, treat them, you know, like, as equals or, mm-hmm. like, just like... Yeah. And I always tell them, look, if we're doing, like, I don't know, an hospital, right, mm-hmm. and a surgery room, if the doctor is excellent and we don't disinfect well, that patient will die.
Right.
And that's our fault.
Right.
So... We have tremendous value in that environment, although mm-hmm. no one gives us any.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, the perfect execution of our role in that environment is determinant to the outcome
correct.
Of the surgery.
Wow.
On the other hand, if we do it excellently and the doctor is just like a drunker,
yes.
and then he messes up, the patient dies. So she's not more important than we are.
Mm-hmm.
We are just in different roles.
Mm.
We are equally as important. Yes.
Well,
and
yeah. Hey, for a guy who said he couldn't really speak very good English in 2007, your command of coloring it in is, I think, what's a challenge as a leader. It's like it's one thing to say this is our product and this
right.
is what we're doing,
right.
but your example of Crossroads and your example yeah. of the hospital, that's right. that like that's really yeah. tying it down to what the how their work is meaningful every
yeah.
day.
And it is true. It's just, it's just a matter of communicating it well to mm. all parts involved, right? I always say that, talking about quotes, right, that a differential that is not perceived has no value.
Correct.
Right? So I might be like, I don't know, like super fast running back, but if I'm playing for the Patriots, like at yeah. some point, you know what I mean? Like,
they're not running the ball.
Yeah, it's not matter. Running. Yeah. It doesn't yeah. matter. There's no value.
Right.
Now, another team that base, you know, its strategy in running, you pay me a lot. While
right.
the Patriots pay me nothing because they don't perceive that as valuable to mm. their to the way they do things or anything like that. So I cannot, it's not even convince, it's show you as a customer that how relevant it is, not just having cleaning, but having cleaning with us.
Yes.
Unless you realize the things that we offer and value them.
Right.
You still might realize and say, no, no value for me. That's fine.
Right.
Not a good fit. Market is fast.
Yep.
Good luck. You know, hope you find someone and we're going to try to find someone too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that we need to embrace the world.
Right. right? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Because there's not, yeah. fortunately the markets are big enough. Do you feel like, I feel like some of your inspiration for coming to the U.S. was your daughter's, I think, response to the town and country. Like, you know, how do you feel about that at this stage?
Oh, I think my inspiration was America.
Okay.
In itself, right? So my need was to give my kids a safer environment to...
You've got this English language better than I do. yeah. So, yeah. You were always inspired to come.
Oh, but
your
came
kids
here
pushed
like,
you over the edge.
Working for SC Johnson. Working for SC Johnson, I won one of the annual, you know, yeah, what was the I don't remember best supervisor or something
yeah.
like in I don't remember if it was Brazil or Latin America, but mm. the prize was to come to Racine, Wisconsin.
Okay.
I think it's Racine. Could be Racine too, but I think it's Racine. I don't know. In Wisconsin, where is the where's the headquarters?
Yes.
Right. So I went there and I was like mesmerized because you know like everything's it's beautiful, it's clean, and we are a poor country, Brazil.
Yeah.
It's not you know, and so everything that I saw impressed me so much, and I didn't ever consider that I would you know be able to live here, or, you know.
Mm.
until, again, you know, then, you know, grow up a little more and you get more experience. Then I came other times, you know, to Orlando, all that stuff. And then my wife had some family here.
Okay.
So we came to visit, and I saw that they were like very nice people, simple people doing like cleaning house and having like a good life.
Yeah.
Which we cannot have in Brazil. Like if you are a janitor in Brazil, it's because you can't do anything else and you are poor perpetually. There is nothing that you can do being a janitor that will move you in the social scale by any means. Okay. Right. I have people here working for me making upwards of $160,000 a year.
Right.
Cleaning offices and cleaning, you know what I mean? Like, and it's not, I mean, but you, I mean, the average for American families, I think it's 47 or 48,000, right?
Right.
So it's
that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And it requires a lot of work.
Yeah.
But my point is, you do work, you're going to get rewarded.
There's value. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we don't have that in Brazil. So when I saw that, I said, look, I want to come here, so I want to live here. I want to give this life, this chance, right, to my kids. Now you say, now looking back and look where we are now. Now my daughter is 25 or 26. She's married. Daniel is 22, right?
Getting his master's.
Getting his master's. Right. Yeah, Gabby is a nurse. You know,
oh, wow.
Is a nurse. She's the nurse for Crossroads School, one of
two
there.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they are super, like, they are pretty much Americans.
Yes.
And they don't have my heavy accent by any means. Yeah, just a parenthesis, right? Some people say that it's charm, right? The accent is a charm. I said, so I work on that. I'll make it heavier.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Then it's more charm. But anyhow, so I'm so glad, you know, that we took that step because it was like literally leaving everything behind. It's not that I had a bad life or anything like that. You know, I was a director for a like an international company. And here is, we went through several like very hard times, very hard times. But again, you know, always happy, always, I always tell them, all we need is the four of us, right? And now the five of us, because there is Zeke too, that is, you know, welcome to the family by marrying Gabby. But that's all we need. You know, as long as we have each other, we are good. And above that, right, as long as we are in that relationship with God, we know that we are in His hands and there is nothing that, you know, will happen to us that's not, like, out of His control. So based on that, I look back and I cry and I praise God and I say thank you. And because America is great, you know. I want to jump to the TV when I see people say, oh, America was never great. Mm. Oh, America, this. You have no idea what you're talking about. This is the greatest country in the world. Is that perfect? No, it's not.
No, it's run by humans who are imperfect.
Of course, but it's way ahead of, you know, in terms of almost all the social issues, including racism, all that stuff, than many other countries. And the only reason someone wouldn't be happy with that is because they don't have the correct benchmark for what
it was.
That should be.
Yes.
You know what,
what it is elsewhere.
Of course.
Yes,
of course.
Exactly.
Of course. So that's very interesting to see. So I love America. I mean, this is an awesome country. I'm not a citizen, but I do everything as if I were, right? Which is also like a good example about English, right? Because if it's conditional, it's I were, not I was.
Yes. Okay, fair.
It's good grammar. and that applies also to that in spite of and not because of. So, right? So I could
I've thought of that like 10 times while you were sitting here.
I could have a company, but I'm not American. I'm not a citizen. So I'll have a company.
Yes, you can still
I'll
do
participate.
It.
I'll do as much as I can.
You can still
you know what
do
mean?
It.
Like in spite of. And America is great. And as I said, like for me as an individual, not just like building the business, but what the business has allowed me to do for the community. That's I can't believe that God would use me or my company or my family to benefit others at that scale. I can't. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, it makes me happy. So to be involved with MEDC or the chamber or giving you know, counseling to people that want to open their business or that are, you know, like helping in any way, shape or form, it's great. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm in debt with America. I'm glad to give
yes.
back.
You know yes.
I
mean?
Like,
yes.
There's,
well, I feel yeah. like you're just, I feel like that when the inspiration for this podcast came about, it was because I felt like through my experience and through others I had talked to in high school and college, it was like, what are you going to be when you grow up? What are you going right, to be when you right, grow right. up? Right. So, and I wanted a place where people could talk about how,
right.
you know, I don't think you ever thought when you were 18, you were going to be no. owning a cleaning company, right? Like,
no,
like
not even close.
Right. And I didn't think I was going to be no. doing this,
yeah.
You know, and, yeah. But I meet people in the middle end of their careers, all stages of life that are just so happy doing what they're doing.
Yeah. yeah.
Even though they had no plan
right.
to do that.
Right.
And I,
right.
and I was like, I have to document this. But what I love about your story and others I've talked to is that I feel like for you, you're just grateful for another chance
oh,
to make a difference every day. And you start with that. And like the in spite of instead of because of, I might steal
right.
that a little bit. That, I mean, it's just,
it
really
it's
is.
Not mine. I just use it.
But I mean, it's wonderful. It really
right.
is wonderful.
Right.
And I mean, your story is fantastic. It's a yeah. fantastic story that you should be so proud of. And I'm,
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am. But as I said, like, I am, and I joke that I can't even brag about it because it's not like, you know, I went to school to be an, you know, overcomer. No,
right.
it's, you know,
yeah.
like life
yeah.
happens and you
yes.
and you take whatever you brought from, you know, mm-hmm. from your early age, that the values and everything that was put into you.
Yeah, conditioned in you.
Everything, including the bad stuff.
Yes.
Right? And again, not because of, but in spite of. I had bad experience in my, you know, like childhood and everything. But you know what? I'm an adult now.
Yes.
The only, you know, like that, those bad experiences only will impede me to do this or that if I allow.
Right.
There's nothing I can do now other than really overcome and be victorious by doing things in spite of again,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not like I'm minimizing others, you know, pains or previous experiences. But it, for me, at least, it was a matter of choice. What I'm mm-hmm. going to, you know, let those experiences or for how long I'll let that affect my life.
Mm.
And I said, no, enough.
I mean, yes. Yeah.
Enough.
Yeah. I'm moving on. I'm going to take
moving
it.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a,
yeah.
Man, it's a hard thing to teach to an 8 and a 6 year old. I'll tell you that.
It is.
It's not, it is. Not hard. It's something you can't
you can teach.
Just talk about
yeah.
once. It's got to be yeah. all the time.
Yeah. And it's not even words. It's more like, how you live. You know what I mean? Like
yes,
how
it,
you live and everything.
Yeah.
And mind you, for instance, I told you my dad was super poor, right? So he has experiences that I will never have.
Correct.
And he's tougher for that than I will ever be.
Right.
Now, my son will never have the experience that I had because of lack of things or and because the very reason I worked hard was to give
yes.
him and my daughter a better life.
Mm.
Thus, they won't be as tough as I am.
Right.
And at some point, that's, you know, like, at some point, they are so soft. Let's
yes.
say.
Yes.
You know, like that things go wrong or and that need to be restarted. And that's the kind of the generational cycle.
It is.
Right. You do like 1, 2, 3, and then one like kind of messes up and then it starts again. And,
it's
and,
the truth. It's a funny, yeah. it's a funny dichotomy about parenting, which
yeah.
is like now, when things go wrong for my kids, and my wife and I are kind of debriefing the other day, I'm kind of glad that happened. You
it
know,
is.
Like it's actually really a blessing that it's happening
yeah.
now as opposed to later.
Yeah, yeah no, it's
to
true.
To deal with stuff. So
and things change, right? I joke that once I was at my parents' house in Brazil a long time ago, and my brother had kids, and one of them were like super mischievous, let's say.
Yeah.
And then my brother, and in Brazil we still spank. At that point,
yeah, yeah.
Not like just, yeah. you know, okay.
Yeah,
so,
I'm
so
not judging at all.
He took,
an Italian household.
So he took the kid to the restroom and then, you know, and then my father goes and says, hey, don't do this for that much. You know what I mean? Like for
yeah.
that thing that she did. Then me and I, we looked at my father and said, you kidding? You would
yeah.
lit us up for much less than that.
Right.
And now it's all to do.
Right.
So it changed.
Yeah,
right?
It does.
Change.
It does.
How
you get older.
How you act. Of course.
You get older
course.
And more empathetic.
Of course.
That is awesome. What's next for Modular Concepts?
So it's interesting. You're gonna laugh, but I think next for Modular Concepts is to. We were super happy. We got to $2 million revenue this past year, right? So that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there are much bigger companies, but I mean, we from zero in 2015, so
100%
was great. I think for us, it's not to get. We're not pursuing revenue growth, but we're pursuing better profitability.
Yeah.
Right, because I just put that number and I was pursuing that and we got it, but it wasn't our most profitable year. Mm-hmm. It was very good still, but I just realized that this is an illusion.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Revenue is nothing. Profit is everything.
Yeah.
And so we are well established and everything. So it's not even a matter of changing what we have. It's just like the approach towards new customers and new businesses mm-hmm. will be a little more more selective in mm-hmm. terms of not like charging more or anything, but just being very precise in terms of not adding new customers just for the sake of
right.
You know, like yeah, numbers.
Making sure it fits the model.
Correct.
Logistically correct. Makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So our main goal is not like to grow 25% this or that. Our main goal is we do have a certain profitability that we wanna keep, and we always had, but this past year and it still was very good. So our goal now is works towards solidifying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then from there having a growth. I always said that I don't wanna gain my next customer at the expense of my previous one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now yes. I remove all the attention that I did here.
Yes.
So, and that requires a pace, a growth pace that is not necessarily the fastest.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
But it's very solid.
You got to close the back door.
Yeah, yeah it's very solid. We always did this and always worked. So I'm kind of going back to that. I am involved with my industry.
Mm-hmm.
So international expos, panels, talking in panels, and that's great. But I do think that took a little bit of my focus of, you know, like the
day to day.
Yeah, the day to day. So I just want to, I still want to do that stuff, but not to brag about modular, but I want to make modular
you know,
great and solid and everything, or keep it this mm-hmm. way. So that's our goal. And again, I can't believe many times, as I said, I love Brandon. I mean, brilliant guy, sharp mind. Mm-hmm. So because I'm like in so many board of directors for the chamber, for MEDC, and I'm with people that I can learn so much from. You know what I mean? Like, and that's for me, like, it's great. It's a gift in itself.
It is. It's great. Like you said earlier, the business has given you so much,
too.
It's like
no question. No question.
Very similar in that regard.
So for me, it's this. I want to solidify the business. I want to keep giving back in a way that makes an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Not just giving back to give back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to make an impact as an individual, as a company. And as I said, our business is helping people. Cleaning is just the channel we do it.
Yes.
Right? The channel we choose to do it. So I wanna find those opportunities
mm-hmm.
and then get things in a certain way that whoever comes to work with us will realize that they are hiring a cleaning company, but they are doing more than that. You know what I mean? Like by hiring us, they are participating at the Metro West Free Medical Clinic.
Yes.
They are helping Crossroads.
Right.
They are helping Tunnel to Towers. They are helping Dana Farber.
Mm.
They are helping, you know, like Shriners.
Right.
All those institutions, some we service, some we don't, but that we are involved, that we're supporting or volunteering or doing things for them. And I think that has a lot of value.
Oh my gosh!
You know what I mean?
It's a community.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and being part of it and giving back, and then
Yeah.
I don't know, raising the collective bar.
Correct.
So to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had the opportunity to talk at the annual meeting for the chamber, along with Christian, the new mayor.
Mm.
We were the two keynote speakers, and it was about diversity, equity, right, inclusion. And my message. And it was very similar to Christian's too. was that, of course, that is important. Mm. But in all honesty, I don't want to be hired because I'm black or Latino. Mm-hmm. I want to be hired because I'm the best choice that you have. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, I do. For me, that thing applies on the opposite side. I don't want you to not hire me because I'm black or Latino, because right. that correct. Would be unfair, right? But I don't care about, you know, those things. I can't change. I was born Latino. I was born black. You right. know, I'm as guilty of being black as you are of being white.
It's not. Right.
I mean, it's not your choice.
Yeah, there's just not, how it happened.
Yes. Oh, look, make me black. No. Right? There's nothing you can do about that. So I don't want to be benefited by that. I don't dispute the reasons and everything. It's just my point of view. I just don't want to be suffer any prejudice because yes. of that, or you mm-hmm. know, or lose opportunities because of that. So so that's why my main concern is not to promote or impose my background in terms of, you know, ethnicity or anything like that, but rather in terms of business knowledge, in terms of systems, in terms of what we can add to your company, and that's it.
Yeah, you know, well, differentiators of value.
Of course,
yeah.
of course.
Yeah.
And as I said, like Christian, you know, he's gay. He's the first gay mayor here in the city, and he said, I hope no one voted for me because I'm gay.
Right.
It's because I'm best option for the city.
Right.
And that's great. And it he is. He's a great guy. Actually, he's one of my oldest customers, too, like
okay.
the salon that he has. Yeah. So.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that's
very
cool.
Yeah. So that's what's next. I got to tell you, I didn't start the podcast because of this, but one of the cool things about the podcast is I get to meet cool people. And I've thoroughly enjoyed my Monday
Thank
afternoon
you.
With you, my well, man. That was I loved sharing your story. I loved your perspective. It's you know, you get wrapped up in doing your job, and then
yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, it's 2:30. I got to go down there right. and meet him. And I just I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story,
man.
Excellent,
my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, keep on keeping on, and I'm pumped that you're right around the corner here.
Yeah, I'm awesome. Close by.
You are.
Yeah,
you
yeah
are.
My people are here every night.
Yeah, they are. They are. Now I know that. Hey,
yeah.
Cheers. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.